In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
Why is capitalism best? Have you ever really thought about it? I'm sure most of our listeners would agree that capitalism is superior to socialism, but why? Why does, wherever they are tried, why does the free market economic system always work better than a government-controlled economic system? Why is it so superior? And why is it that the American form of capitalism, our free market system, is so superior to all other countries' free market economies? Last week, Obama gave his annual Lie Fest, better known as the State of the Union Address. As well informed as our audience is, I'm sure by now you've heard various conservatives fact-checking Obama's State of the Union on job creation, economic growth, and so on. But fact-checking Obama is actually pretty easy pickings, especially once you blow away the smoke and take away his mirrors. But we want to go deeper than just fact-checking and analyze the progressive ideology that lies at the heart of the speech. During his speech, Obama said, quote, "I want to focus less on a checklist of proposals and focus more on the values at stake and the choices before us." On today's show, we're going to analyze and expose the foundations of progressive ideology underlying those values and proposals, like faith in big government as the main economic driver, the unfairness of wealth, and that regulation is the solution. We'll also look at why America's free market is so superior. And to talk about all this, I'd like to welcome Dr. Gerard Lemuro. He's founder and CEO of Lemuro Economics, a company focused on promoting practical economic knowledge about freedom, economic growth, and prosperity. Dr. Lemuro, it's an honor to talk to you.
It's great to be with you.
I'd also like to mention that he's the author of three books, Renewing America and Its Heritage of Freedom, America's Economic War, A Citizen's Handbook for Understanding the War Between American Capitalism and Socialism, and Choosing the Good Life. And now that last book, that's about two competing economic visions, correct?
That's right. Capitalism and socialism.
That's right. It always does seem to come down to the one or the other of those. And as always, we will make sure that we link up all of that on iSpyRadio.com. Just head there, and we'll have links to all of his books and some of his really great blog posts there on his site. His site is GerardLemuro.com. And so we're going to use the President's State of the Union that was just recently given here as kind of the backdrop for a lot of our show's discussion here. And if I had to boil that down to well, first of all, he had a number of claims there that we're creating more jobs, that the recovery is underway. And now it's time to expand government, raise taxes, and give away even more stuff than ever before, including free community college, childcare, and so on. I think if I had to boil the entire State of the Union down to one phrase, it would be that big government is best. And our listening audience is very intelligent and they're very well informed, so they know that, as Reagan said, big government is not the solution to our problems, it is the problem. And they also know that a free market system is best and often the antithesis to big government, which gets in the way of a free market system. But let's talk about the free market system itself. You've got a great website and you break down a lot of this. And on that, one is the 9 characteristics of a free market system. Walk us through that, if you could.
Oh, sure. I'd be happy to do it. And for people who want to read about those 9 characteristics, America's Economic War, that particular book goes into depth in all of this. So to begin with, the free market is characterized by the fact it's free, meaning people have liberty, economic freedom to do what they think is best within the usual constraints of safety and doing things legally. You're not committing fraud, that sort of thing. But it's free, it's cooperative, and it's peaceful. One of the characteristics of big government and socialism is the opposite of the fact that it's cooperative. It's usually forced on you. If you don't do what's said, then you get fined, you get jailed, that sort of thing. And it's coerced. But in a true free market, it's free, cooperative, and peaceful. That is the first characteristic. The second thing is you're free to choose your work. In many socialist countries and in countries that have socialist-type regulations, you may not be free to enter a profession. It may be so regulated, you can't. even if you want to do something, it's just too hard to get it done. So that's the second characteristic. The third is you're free to be an investor. You're free to get your friends together, put your capital together, and you're free to invest in what you think is the next best product or the next best service. The fourth is you're free to be an entrepreneur and start your own business. You have an idea for a better mousetrap, or you have an idea for an internet app to go on your smartphone. You think, boy, that's a great idea. Lots of people will buy it. I'll make some money. And guess what? You're going to be adding value to the nation. You're going to be increasing the gross domestic product by having another product out there selling. And you're going to make some money, and you may even get rich, like Bill Gates. When he started, you remember Microsoft DOS and the operating system that got Microsoft started? Well, he was a small little company. I even know somebody who knew Bill Gates when he just started that company. And it's remarkable what he produced. Since I'm still using his product today, I'm on one of the various operating system versions that he put out. The next characteristic is free to create capital formation. I can become a venture capitalist if I want, and I can set up funds whose purpose is to invest in great new ideas and great new entrepreneurs. Another characteristic that's vital is that you're free to earn profits. Profits are the motivating factor. People aren't going to do something for nothing. We have examples dating back to the Pilgrims where when people don't earn anything, they don't do anything. Because why should they? People, it's true, you can be benevolent, and some people volunteer their time. But in general, people aren't going to put their maximum effort into something they get nothing out of. So earning profits is a key to a free market because it's the motivating, the driving force behind doing new things. Then you should be free to compete. If you think you can do something better, do it better. By the way, in the healthcare system, it was broken a few years ago. Now it's really broken, much worse under Obamacare. But I was going to point something out. 5 years ago, I was on the radio talking against Obamacare and thinking it would be a disaster, and it turned out to be worse than even I thought. But one thing I wanted to say is back then, I remember, two industries, costs were going down, and it was because of competition. Those two industries were laser eye surgery and cosmetic surgery. They were not regulated, even though they were sort of in the healthcare general area. When there was competition, the prices went down. All the rest of healthcare was starting to break because of the enormous regulations, subsidies, and other things that the government interfered with that marketplace. And then their fix was to take it over 100%. Yeah. It was having problems when they had 50% of it. And at that time, it was roughly 50%. The rest of it was mostly regulated. And well, now it's even worse.
Yeah, it absolutely is worse, and on a number of levels, which is the fact that, if nothing else, when you're forced into buying something, I mean, price is the single biggest driver in terms of, the option to buy something, whether or not, is the single biggest driver in terms of price determination. All right, we do need to take a break. Everyone stay with us. We'll have more on the free market system and talking about the State of the Union with Dr. Gerard Lomero. Stay with us. And welcome back to the iSpy Radio Show. We're talking about the President's State of the Union address, and that's really going to be the backdrop of a lot of our discussion here. But it's really about economics and free market systems and getting a better understanding of these principles of really the American system. And to do all of that, we are talking with Dr. Gerard Lomero. He's the founder and CEO of Lomero Economics, a company focused on promoting practical economic knowledge. He's got some books out there, and to find those, just head to iSpyRadio.com, and we'll link all of that up. Going into the break, we were talking about, we'd gotten halfway through your circle there. When people head to their site, your site, they'll see a characteristics of a free market link, and very nicely drawn out little graphic there. And so we had left off with free to compete, and next up is free to buy, own, use, and sell private property. And private property really is one of the cornerstones of a free market system. So why don't you kind of pick us up from there?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. The next characteristic of a free market is the freedom to buy, own, use, donate, sell, sort of to employ your private property and the ability to even have private property. You know, if you go back to Karl Marx in the Communist Manifesto, he said, and I'm not quoting word for word, but essentially he said that private property is the essence of capitalism or freedom, free enterprise, and communism is just the opposite. Socialism, communism really doesn't believe in private property, or they believe in limiting it greatly and controlling it through big government. But if we're truly to have a free market, we must be able to buy property, use it, sell it, develop it, create it from scratch. We can create new products in that, and that's part of being free. It's part of economic freedom, and it's part of a free market. Okay, the ninth characteristic, and again, there's a nice diagram on my website, and there's plenty of information on my website if your listeners want to go there, is the freedom to set prices. If the government regulates the prices, it's going to basically set all the other factors. Prices is kind of that special pivot point around which people make a decision to buy something or not. People say, gee, I can't afford that high-end vehicle, or I can't afford a new boat, or whatever. You know, people look at their budget, they look at how much they have to spend money on essentials like food and shelter, transportation, those sort of things, and they say, okay, well, I have this much disposable income for my toys or my other pursuits, and so basically, the price is going to determine whether or not they purchase it. And so if the government comes in and said, well, this is going to be such and such a price, it distorts the whole market. The market might not be able to produce enough. There are any number of products over the years where the government has set a price and say, you can't charge more than this. Well, guess what? Manufacturers start or stop manufacturing it because they can't make a profit. They can't even make their basic cost structure. They can't make them at those prices. So when the government comes in and sets prices, it does all sorts of problems. And by the way, this also applies with the labor market too. If the government says you must charge $15 an hour, the employer must pay $15 an hour, so the employee is like setting a price through the government of $15 an hour. Well, guess what? Maybe people aren't going to buy $12 hamburgers.
Yeah.
Or, you know, wherever it applies. I mean, when the government has these grandiose ideas, we'll set a price, guess what? You may have a shortage. Right now, they're doing that with doctors. Just think of it. A lot of doctors are leaving the practice of medicine because of two factors. Too much paperwork that's driving them insane. They didn't get into health care to do paperwork. And the other thing is they're not making much money. In some cases, they're losing money. Their practices are losing money because the government says, we'll only reimburse you this much money.
Yeah.
And the government is setting most of the prices in medicine today.
Well, and I really like what Friedrich Hayek said about prices and the ludicrous notion that government could somehow be more efficient at determining prices than what the market is. He's got a quote that says the economic calculation cannot be reduced to a set of government equations because the knowledge underlying such calculations is the sum of countless perceptions of individuals in the markets. And you think about it, I mean, that is the essence of a free market where you have literally millions of people making buying and selling decisions every single day. How in the world can some government bureaucrat with a calculator ever figure that out?
Well, they can't. There's no way. There are literally billions of decisions. And if your goal is to use scarce economic resources in an optimal way, you want to optimize the economy, you can't do it through the government.
No.
Because there's no set of differential equations, difference equations, calculus equations, you name it. There's no set of equations you can build that represent everybody's thinking throughout the entire economy. That's why it failed. That's why Hayek called it the fatal conceit, that they think because they have a degree from MIT or somewhere, or Harvard, and I'm not knocking those institutions.
Oh, it's
they
okay.
They think that just having a degree from a great institution does not mean that you know it all and you can run an entire economy for 320 million Americans.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's go ahead and take our break a little bit early here. We've got a lot to discuss. Everyone stay with us. We're going to have more with Dr. Gerard Lamiro talking about the economics that were on display in the State of the Union address. Stay with us. And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show. I'm your host, Mark Anderson, talking today to Dr. Gerard Lamiro. He's the founder and CEO of Lamiro Economics, author of three books, and of course, you can find all of those at iSpyRadio.com. And we've been talking about the economic principles of a free market system and what are the characteristics of that. And I'd like to shift just a little bit, but before we do, I know that in talking with people, some listeners and whatnot, they sometimes get a little confused about what exactly a free market system is, in the sense that I have often heard people say, well, that means no government control. And just to be clear, a free market system does not mean the absence of government. So define for our audience, what is a government's proper role within a free market system?
Well, I think the best way to look at it is the government is an enabler of a clean playing field. We do not want to allow things like fraud. We do not want society's safety to be at risk. The government should really play a hand in setting a level playing field for everyone so that you take care of prosecuting fraud, you take care to make sure basic safety needs are met so that products don't come out, cars that would crash or planes that would crash, that sort of thing. And then also government is in the business of mediating disputes. The justice system is there when you have a contract that was freely entered into and there's a dispute. Somebody says, you promised to only charge me XYZ and you charged me ABC and I think you owe me money. I don't think it was fair. And so you have judges to go in there and say, this appears to be the factual content here. This is your agreement. We're going to enforce your agreement. So enforcing agreements is part of the government's role. And then, of course, government has a larger umbrella role. It has to protect the whole economy from intrusion from the outside. So, for example, if another country that has the desire to take over our economic system in our country and wants to subjugate us to their way of life, the government needs to have a military to protect us from those kind of incursions, those kind of attacks, things like terrorist attack. We don't want 9/11 to happen again, ever again. And we need to protect against those kind of attacks, including what I wrote about recently, cyber attacks.
Yes,
And the threat of cyber attacks.
Yeah, we just had a show on that economic warfare and it being really the new form of warfare for the 21st century.
Yeah, although there's plenty of other kinds of warfare too, unfortunately.
That's
but basically,
true.
The government's job is to protect us from external threat and from internal threats. And beyond that, it should just have a judicial system that allows to arbitrate disputes.
Right.
Beyond that, people should be free to pursue life, liberty, and their happiness.
Yep. So we've been talking about the free market system, and it's not really unique to America. I mean, America didn't invent this per se, but it has its origins in European economies, especially the Scottish economist Adam Smith, who wrote Wealth of Nations in 1776. These were very influential in the start of America. So let's talk about the building blocks that make up the architecture of American capitalism. What makes American capitalism so unique and has made it so successful?
Well, that it's pretty straightforward, actually. the way I look at it is there's key infrastructure, and those are various institutions. There are key requirements for things like private property. There are key freedoms you need, and there are key laws underlying all of it. Okay? So the architecture of American capitalism Let's start at the key laws at the bottom. Okay, there is the divine law and natural law.
Mm-hmm.
And we can go into a lot of detail or a little detail, but basically these are the basic things, the basic laws we all sort of have in our heads, in our hearts. Things like you can't kill your neighbor. You can't steal their property. Those are just morally wrong. And so we have those kind of key laws that are at the foundation of our government. And actually, the foundation of most governments around the world don't allow murder. At least, there is the issue of capital punishment. That's a separate topic. Another key law is the rule of law. Everybody in America should follow the same laws. Even the President of the United States needs to follow the law. Just because you are a CEO who makes a lot of money, or just because you're a turned-off radical activist, you still have to follow the rule of law. It doesn't matter who you are, what your role is. And finally, economically, we have to follow contract law. It is simply not permissible for people to make contracts with one another and then walk away from them.
Yeah. I'm going to jump forward a little bit here because we do want to encourage people to go to your website and read your materials. One of the things that I found really interesting in your discussion of the architecture of American capitalism was the notion that it is really has been inspired by Judeo-Christian biblical principles. And and to me, that really also explains why socialism is so opposed to it. Socialism is a very immoral form of government because at its heart, it's slavery. So why don't you talk to us about that real quick? We got about a minute or so before our break.
Yeah, well, actually, I go into it in a lot of detail in the first four chapters of the newest book, Renewing America and Its Heritage of Freedom. But to give you kind of a quick couple of key bullets, socialism, for one thing, believes in confiscating property and redistributing it. That's
yes.
Part of Marxism. That's what a lot of the professors in the university seem to love. But when you think of it, that's a violation of one of those concepts I just said in divine law and natural law. And that is, my property is my property. You're not allowed to take it. And that's something very fundamental that we believe in, not allowing theft. And if you take too much, should you, for example, be able to take 70% of a person's earnings for taxes? We're yeah. getting pretty close to that in some places.
Yes, we are.
Right
yes,
now,
we are.
We're looking at 50-60% tax. Remember when Phil Mickelson, the great golfer from San Diego area, mentioned that his marginal tax rate was around 64%, I think.
Mm-hmm.
He was a little upset, but he got criticized by the socialists because he didn't want to pay 64% of everything he earned to the government
for
the various government entities.
Yeah,
isn't that a lot of money?
Isn't it an outrage, really, that he'd be upset at that?
We do need to take a break here.
Everyone stay with us. We'll have more with Dr. Lamiro coming up. We're going to be talking about the differences between socialism and capitalism. Back. We're talking today to Dr. Gerard Lamiro. He is the founder and CEO of Lamiro Economics and has a really great website, gerardlamiro.com. And of course, we'll link that up on our site, excuse me, ispyradio.com. And on that site, you have a matrix there that depicts the breakdown between the two ideologies of capitalism versus socialism. So let's discuss those differences and how this is playing out in America. I think one of the biggest ones is the difference between spiritual and moral cultural differences between the two. So why don't you talk to us a little bit about that?
Okay. Well, the very essence of the model that America runs under, the model of the Constitution and liberty, was really set there by the Declaration of Independence and the realization that all men are created under God and that they have basic rights. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, which some people say the pursuit of happiness is the ability to own property and pursue getting some new property. And our cultural model is really based on those spiritual principles. And our human rights come from the fact that we believe that every man and woman has human dignity, and that dignity comes from God. That's simply where all of this
mm-hmm.
originated.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look to the founders, they spoke of God all the time. And faith is really at the basis of our system and also morality. And as I make a big point in the newest book, without morality, you can't have freedom. And without freedom, you can't have morality. And we could talk about that if you like. On the flip side, since we're comparing this to socialism, and one thing, by the way, American capitalism is all about freedom. And socialism is all about control
absolutely.
By the government.
Yep, absolutely.
And so the flip side of faith and morality is what you have with socialism. You have atheism and immorality. And have you noticed as America has become more socialist, you know, they talk about progressive. Well, it's progressing towards socialism.
Yes.
That's what the word progressive means.
Yes, and God and morals and ethics are all being pushed aside and being driven really out of the public discussion.
That's right. You're not even supposed to mention it. And you're backward for thinking that there's such a thing as morality and you can't just do anything you please.
Yeah.
Which is license. That's not freedom.
That's right.
License.
That's right.
But anyway, socialism is characterized by atheism. Look at how more and more you can't mention God. You can't display a cross. A little girl can't wear a cross to sixth grade. Somebody else gets booted out of school because they brought a Bible to show the class. I mean, crazy things that are going on. And of course, concomitant with that is immorality. Look around the country and see how the morality has broken down. Things that we would take for granted a decade ago are now passé. Immorality is taking over, and that's what you would expect with socialism. I have a famous quote I say all the time, and that is, socialism always leads to economic and moral bankruptcy.
Yeah.
And isn't that where we're going?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, I'm glad you brought that up because I'd really like to spotlight the notion of socialism, control of the culture, and eliminating religious freedoms. And again, all of this is covered on your website. But here in Oregon, actually, we have seen things like the government-sponsored youth sexuality conferences. And, you know, we've done a couple of shows on this. And the essence of this is to promote promiscuity among kids. And it's really a breakdown of cultural barriers and certainly a breakdown of between parents and kids. And it's promoting a culture of anything goes, undermining and contradicting not only parental teachings, but religious teaching as well. So what's the purpose of that? How does that ultimately help socialists control the economy?
Well, the one thing that religion, in particular Judeo-Christian heritage and those religions, brings to the world is freedom. Because the basis of that religion is the fact that God so loved us, he gave us freedom. He gave us a world in which we decide what we do. We are free. We can free to choose God, we can reject God. But at the very essence of our human dignity is the freedom to live and to enjoy life, to choose God or not to choose God, and then to choose what we do with our lives. So socialists are based in power. They want to control everyone. They think they know it's better, or else they just like, some of them just like power. And the one thing that stands in the way of them having power over everyone is religion, because religion says we all have human dignity and we cannot be dictated to by a government. God is our God. Government is not our God. And that's the reason socialism can't stand Christianity, because it gets in the way of their power.
Well, that's interesting. I'd never really thought of that quite that way, in the sense that under a socialist model, they're essentially replacing God with government. That's really interesting.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, one of the things that you have on there is socialism's chain of control, and I think that's fascinating, because just to walk people through that, and then I think we'll go ahead and go to our break. You say, to create a socialist utopia, socialism must control the economy. To control the economy, socialism must eliminate economic freedom. To eliminate economic freedom, socialism must control the government. To control the government, socialism must eliminate political freedom. To eliminate political freedom, socialism must control the culture. And finally, to control the culture, socialism must eliminate religious freedom. I just think that is such a great encapsulation of socialism's methodology there. We have a very full segment yet to go here, and so let's go ahead and take a break just a little bit early. We will be back with more between the differences between socialism and capitalism with Dr. Gerard Lemiro. Stay with us. And welcome back. Today on the iSpy Radio Show, we are talking all about economics and free market systems and comparing those also to socialism. And to do all that, we are talking with Dr. Gerard Lemiro. His website is gerardlemiro.com. It might be easiest to head to iSpyRadio.com, and we will not only have links to his site, but also to his books and some of his articles that we want to spotlight that we have talked about during this show. To follow up from the last segment there where we're talking about the chain of control that you have on your website, I think one of the things that needs to be discussed here is this idea of income redistribution, because you talk about that it's got to, you know, that socialism has to control the economy and also freedoms within that. So how does that fit in, number one, under a socialist chain of control? But also, why is it that so many people, certainly here in America, and definitely in other socialist countries, why is it that they always fall for this? I mean, why do they not see that the promise to redistribute income just never works, and it always ends up going to the rich anyway?
Yeah, well, I actually answer that question in Chapter 4 of America's Economic War, and I think the title of the chapter was The Seduction of Socialism. Socialism seduces people, sometimes our brightest and best people in the country, for a variety of different reasons. Some people, it's the fatal conceit. Some people, it's power. They really want power. Some people are altruistic, and they think that they're doing this to help the poor instead of the fact that they're making everybody poor. And there are a list of reasons. If you go back to the history of socialism, the early proponents believed in free love and free everything else. And so there was a certain thing about, it's okay to have sex with anybody, and relationships are temporary, and some people bought into that, and that was a seduction as well. So there are a whole host of reasons, and you can delve into that if you want to read Chapter 4 of America's Economic War. But at any rate, the redistribution of wealth all fits together, because with economic freedom, you use your money the way you want to, you invest, you get a job you like, all of it, you're free to do that. But when you do that, the socialists don't have control over you or the economy. And so what they're doing when they take money from the rich, so to speak, and I put that in quotes, but when they take it from the private sector, what they're doing is that they're using it where it'll have the least effect on them, where it'll dissipate your power to start a new business. Because, for example, capital is formed in different ways and invested in different ways, but if they ultimately control where the money goes, they're investing. For example, Solyndra, how much money did they give them?
Yes.
It was $700 million, and they went bankrupt. Guess what? That was inefficient to the economy. But guess what? Had a venture capitalist had $700 million, he would have never given it to Solyndra. Because
right.
In an early stage startup, you might, if you think an idea is promising, which I don't know if that one ever was, but if it were, you might give them $25 million for a first round, an A-series round of investment. And if they didn't make good on that $25 million, you think they'd give them another $675
million? Well,
No way.
Well, and that's what was especially stupid about Solyndra, as I understood it, was they had already shown that they weren't making any money off of those. And yet they went ahead and gave them a second round of funding after the evidence was there that it was not going to work.
Well, you see, in a free market, it gets invested well and efficiently.
Yeah, absolutely right. Absolutely right. So critics of the free market system say that it ultimately leads to massive wealth held by very few. In fact, just this week, there was a report out of Europe that at the Davos World Economic Summit, the billionaires there in attendance are all concerned suddenly about this accumulation of wealth in the hands of very few may end up leading to massive economic and societal collapses. So is the concentration of wealth in the hands of very few the ultimate end game of capitalism?
No, of course not. Creative destruction. You know, the thing about the economic difference, you need an economic difference. you need some people to succeed and others who have yet to succeed working on succeeding. That's the incentive to people to do well, and that's what builds the economy. The incentive, like, I may make a profit. If I start my little bead company and I make little jewelry, I may become the next Bill Gates. And people work hard because they know there's an incentive. That's what is really good. And no, you know what happens with the people with a lot of money? They create foundations, and they wind up giving the money away in benevolent ways. And what happens with the poor? They don't stay poor. In study after study, we see that people who are at the bottom of the ladder get out of there pretty quick. Yeah. Now, there are some people who make it a living to live off the government, and that's their choice in a free society to stay on welfare. But most people have the self-esteem and the desire to better themselves and their families. And there's a high turnover at the bottom, and the people at the top, I think, rarely keep their money more than one or two generations. The Rockefeller Foundation, the Ford Foundation, all these foundations were created by people, Hewlett-Packard Foundation. And that you just see time and time again, those go to charity, that big money. So that's another one of those red herrings the socialists throw out to try to destroy freedom and economic freedom.
Well, but in terms of the extreme disparity between, you know, like the average middle class person and somebody that's a multi, you know, you look at a Bill Gates who's got, you know, tens of billions of dollars. I think the most recent Forbes estimated him at like $70 billion or something like that. Isn't there an inherent danger there where somebody, let's say a Bill Gates decided he wanted to suddenly start destroying other companies and whatnot? When they have that much wealth at their disposal, isn't there a danger there? And what ought to be the response to it?
No, there really isn't. I mean, there are laws against predatory pricing. There are all sorts of laws that help to create some degree of fairness and equity. Mostly people like that start donating their money. And I think if you follow Bill Gates, you'll see that he's in the process of spending what he made.
Yes, he has.
There's no way he can spend it personally.
Yeah, and you bring up a good point. And not only is he divesting himself of all of his funds, but even he's even publicly stated that each one of his three kids will receive a maximum of $10 million from him. All right, let's go ahead and take a break right here. Coming up, we'll be talking about the State of the Union and some of the outcomes of Obama economics. And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show. I'm your host, Mark Anderson, talking today to Dr. Gerard Lamiro. He's the founder and CEO of Lamiro Economics, a company that is focused on promoting practical economic knowledge, and we are all about that here on the iSpy Radio Show. And we've been really kind of using the State of the Union as the backdrop. Unfortunately, we really haven't gotten there, but there was a big aspect of his speech that boiled down to giving away free stuff, you know, whether it's free college or free healthcare and free childcare, free sick days, and on and on and on. And so there's a big divide in this country with those who still believe in personal responsibility and free market principles and those who want the free stuff. If you had to narrow it down to one thing, and I can kind of guess what I think this will be, what's been Obama's biggest impact on that divide when we analyze his political and economic policies?
Well, his role seems to be to tax, spend, borrow, increase our debt, and promise everybody, you know, a free lunch. And this is a Santa Claus speech. And in addition, he discusses all the ways he's going to try to recoup some of the money by taxing the private sector. The problem that socialists like the president, and I call him a socialist based on his policy.
Yeah, absolutely.
The problem with it all is never in the history of civilization has a government created wealth.
That's right.
All governments do is consume wealth, and he's no exception. I think the debt has gone up $8 trillion under his watch, and he's not even done yet.
Yeah.
and you know what? Someday that'll have to get repaid somehow. And I don't know how, and I doubt if he'll be president when it gets repaid. But the problem with the speech is it's more taxing, more spending, more regulating, and all of this retards economic growth, which means less wealth is created to pay for all these programs. You can give everybody everything, And then what you have is Cuba or North Korea, where everyone is in dire poverty because the government has absorbed all the wealth of the private sector. There's nothing left, and nobody's creating any new wealth.
Yeah.
We have to create wealth. These programs are more taxes, and basically they're going to retard growth further. We've had the most anemic recovery in the history in the last 100 years. And we're not doing the right things. These policies are wrong. They're going to further retard the economy.
Yeah. This notion that we've fully recovered is, of course, laughable for anybody that's actually paying attention. Within the State of the Union, Obama said, quote, "That's what middle-class economics is, the idea that this country does best when everyone gets their fair shot, everyone does their fair share, and everyone plays by the same set of rules." But we talked about Solyndra earlier. Unfortunately, that's just not occurring. And it seems to me that there's more government business collusion than ever. So big companies can get government-backed advantages that small companies cannot get. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, your poll quote from the speech sounds like what Obama does frequently. He'll throw in a couple of sentences that sound conservative, but the policies have nothing to do with those poll quotes. And if you look at what he's asking for here, a $320 billion tax increase from things like increasing the capital gains tax, that means less new businesses, less
sure.
new products and services, less new jobs. Less new revenue to the country. Increasing capital gains is a mistake. He's also going to apply capital gains tax, these higher rates, on inherited assets so that parents have a harder time to pass along some of their assets to their children. It used to be that they pass along tax-free, and the basis that the children inherit those assets is stepped up. And that's great because, why should all of a parent's assets be taxed and taken away? You know, some of the inheritance taxes are pretty high.
Yeah.
Look at other things. The president proposed the 529 be taxed. Well, why have a 529? The purpose of the 529 is to save your kids' education and have the earnings with the money, you contribute to a 529, it gains some earnings, and then it does so tax-free when you take it out for a qualified purpose like tuition, books, room, and board. And here he proposed that, but late yesterday, I noticed the White House withdrew that and
yeah,
said they're no longer supporting the 529 tax increase. Well, that's a good idea. At least that's one step that's right. But the idea of a free community college for everybody in the United States, well, okay, free, so that means there's no cost. We don't have to pay the teachers. We don't pay for books. No, of course not. We're talking $60 billion of federal money, $20 billion of state money, and it's another entitlement. It doesn't really help the truly poor because they already get Pell Grants. And the Pell Grants are more than the average cost of tuition at community colleges. So what we see here is another giveaway program.
Yeah.
But in this case, it'll be helping people who have a lower need for it. And it's doing so at the expense of the entire economy. So people
exactly
will
right.
pay, but they'll pay indirectly. And so I would say the speech was more of the same, taxing and spending, increase the debt.
Yes, it sure was. And as we've seen in countries like Russia and all of these other socialist and communist countries, it just doesn't work. Dr. Lemire, I want to thank you so much for your time today. Unfortunately, we are up against the clock and we need to get going, but we would definitely like to have you back on sometime in the near future.
I'd love to be back on with you. It's a great show, and I'm looking forward to our next visit together.
All right. Sounds good. Thank you so much. You know, before we get going, when it comes to these kinds of in-depth educational shows, it's really important to know how we did. So we'd absolutely love to hear from you. How did we do? Was it helpful? Did it improve your depth of understanding about the free market or about the differences between socialism and free market systems? Granted, with only 1 hour, we can only cover so much, but did we miss something that you would really have liked to know more about? You can get in touch with us any one of three ways. Through Facebook, just look for the iSpy Radio Show, on Twitter, @iSpy Radio Show, or via email, mark@iSpyRadio.com. If we did our job well today, you should be armed with more knowledge so that the next time someone tries to extol the virtues of socialism, you can stand up and say, not so fast. Because as always, the best information does you no good if you can't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.